वारसाथीन्द्रे ब्रजाखो पाव भग्नमानेति विवला होत्रलीला तपातेना राथो बाधरानुग्रन्नता O sober Vidura, King Indra, whose honor having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavan, and thus the inhabitants of Braja, the land of cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger with his pastime umbrella, the Govardhan Hill. Sarachcha sikadaira mirishtam manayam rajani mukham gayan kalapatam reme strinam mandala mandanaha. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed as the central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. Report. Before leaving the land of cows, Vrindavan, the Lord pleased his young girlfriends, the transcendental gopis, in his rasa-lila pastimes. Here, Uddhava stopped his descriptions of the Lord's activities. Uddhava uvacha patyapuram svapitros Chikirshaya Shambaladeva Samyata Nipatya Tungajupuyutanatam Hatam Vyakarshad Vyasum Ojasovyam. Sri Uddhava said, thereafter Lord Krishna went to Mathura city with Baladev, and to please their parents, they dragged Kamsa, the leader of public enemies, down from his throne and killed him, pulling him along the ground with great strength. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. King Kamsa's death is only briefly described here because such pastimes are vividly and elaborately described in the 10th canto. The Lord proved to be a worthy son of his parents, even at the age of 16 years. Both brothers, Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev, went to Mathura from Vrindavan and killed their maternal uncle, who had given so much trouble to their parents, Vasudev and Devaki. Kamsa was a great giant, and Vasudeva and Devaki never thought that Krishna and Balaram would be able to kill such a great and strong enemy. When the two brothers attacked Kamsa on the throne, their parents feared that now Kamsa would finally get the opportunity to kill their sons, whom they had hidden for so long in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The parents of the Lord, due to parental affection, felt extreme danger, and they almost fainted, just to convince them that they had actually killed Kamsa. Krishna and Baladev pulled Kamsa's dead body along the ground to encourage them. While remembering the Lord's beautiful pastimes with gopis during the Sarat Purnima, he cannot continue his remembrance of the pastimes of Vrindavan. The Rasa Lila of Krishna and Gopis is the pinnacle, the summit of Krishna's most ecstatic loving exchanges with his most surrendered, purified and intimate associates, the Braja Gopis. So after this wonderful pastime which took place in Vrindavan, Uddhava goes to Krishna's pastimes in Mathura, which begins with the killing of Kamsa. Such a difference in moods from the Rasleela to the killing of Kamsa. All Krishna's pastimes are completely transcendental. And by hearing about them and speaking about them, Krishna purifies our heart by his most loving mercy. So in this verse that we are reading today, Uddhava is describing this glorious, momentous pastime of the killing of Kamsa. Something that everyone was waiting and longing for many years. We know that the demigods, they approached with the guidance of Lord Brahma, the ocean of milk. They prayed to the Kshirodakshai Vishnu, who resides on an island in that ocean called Svetadvip, that he appear to relieve the burden of the world, which was headed by Kamsa. Kamsa was such a powerful asura that he actually traveled to so many other planets and other places, and he, with his strong arms, due to great tapasya, he was able to conquer all the demons, all the asuras. And when he had them just on the verge of death, then he told them, "I will spare your life if you become my servant, if you live only for my mission." So in this way, not out of love, but out of fear and the respect that demons may have for each other, all the demons practically in the entire universe were Kamsa's servants. Perhaps with the exception of Jarasandha, because Jarasandha was the father-in-law of Kamsa. And his two daughters were married to Kamsa. So in this way, the power of Kamsa literally conquered the entire planet Earth. And he assembled all these demons from all these places to live on Earth. Demons from all over the universe, they all came to congregate to live on the Earth. And according to our acharyas, it is described that actually they wanted to mobilize their forces. When different personalities of the same persuasion are spread out, sometimes that creates a weakness. But when they're all in one place, developing and growing, then they become indestructible. So this was Kamsa's plan. Bring all these asuras to the earth, and we'll develop such power, we'll conquer the entire universe. And the demigods understood that they had the power to conquer the universe. They led by such a demon as Kamsa, who had the strength of no less than 10,000 mad elephants. So it was to rid the burden of Kamsa, which was one of the primary external reasons for Krishna to appear. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. This vinashaya cha duskritam. To annihilate the miscreants, Krishna had come. And how wonderful it was that he was born right in the palace of the person he was to kill. Krishna is so wonderful. By his yogamaya potency, the very demon that he was descending to destroy, he had that demon commit these atrocities to his mother and father, Devaki and Vasudeva, by imprisoning them. Then he had this, by his own arrangement, he allowed this demon to kill his six older brothers. And then he personally took his birth right in Kamsa's own prison cell. Kamsa kept this prison cell very close by to his own residence, because as soon as a baby was born, within a matter of seconds, he was down there with his sword ready to destroy the child. He did not want to take any chances. And while Krishna was living in Vrindavan, after Vasudev took him across Jamuna, then Kamsa, he became so envious and fearful of his own destiny due to the omen that was spoken in the sky that his eighth son would be the cause of his death, that Kamsa actually ordered every child who was born to be murdered. Every baby. There's a similar story in the Bible of the Christians, that when Lord Jesus Christ took birth in a place called Bethlehem, just outside of Jerusalem, some prophets, some wise men, told the king that a very great powerful person who will be a great king is being born. So this king's name was Herod, and he ordered every child who was born to be murdered. And his soldiers just went into all the villages and all the towns and all the cities and looked, searched every home, and any baby that was born in that recent time, they were murdered. So this is how people can become so atrocious and violent just to protect their own existence. To the extent a human being covered by false ego can be selfish is beyond the comprehension of any decent person. So Kamsa was killing all children, and he was sending so many asuras. He sent Putana, but Krishna killed. And by his order, all these demons were coming to Vrindavan. They had no choice. If they didn't follow, they would be killed by Kamsa. So any demon would rather be killed by Krishna than Kamsa, because it's definitely a better result. So all these demons were coming, Trinavarta, Aghasura, Bakasura, Pralambasura, Denukasura. Keshi, Asura, Aristasura, Vyomasura, Vatsasura, they all came to Vrindavan, and Krishna was killing all of them. And meanwhile, Kamsa was the king. Devaki and Vasudeva were in prison all these years. Ugrasena, the grandfather of Krishna, was in prison all these years. Such a terrible personality. And when Krishna was approximately, according to Uddhava, about 11 years old, Akrura took him out of Vrindavan, because Kamsa tried so many ways to kill Krishna. But finally, he wanted to try to kill him in Mathura. There's some sort of a psychology like this amongst people who are competitive, that if in your own home court you have more strength, more chance of winning. When you're in the other person's field or court, somehow or other they have the advantage, because all the fans are saying Kijai to you. But when you're in somebody else's court, they're used to that court and the atmosphere is more familiar and all the fans are saying, just blaspheming the other people, the other team, and praising you. So Kamsa understood that there's no way to kill Krishna in Vrindavan. And Narada Muni told Kamsa that Krishna is the eighth son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Not only that, in your previous life you were a demon named Kalanemi and Krishna killed you. He's Vishnu and he's come again to kill you. So better you kill him first. So Kamsa was very much making every possible strategy he could. So he used his incredibly powerful intelligence that how to get Krishna to come to Mathura. If he comes to the home court of me, then we'll have more strength. And I'll send my best, most powerful demons against him, and if they can't do it, I will kill him myself. So knowing that it won't be easy to get Krishna and Balaram to come to Mathura, he sent Akrura, knowing Akrura was a pure devotee, an intimate associate of Krishna. He was Krishna's uncle, and he loved Krishna. That if Akrura requests, Krishna cannot refuse. So this is the mentality of politics, that you somehow or other try to manipulate and exploit in such a way to defeat your opponent. So he was thinking like this. And Akrura understand he was just being manipulated and used by Kamsa to kill his worshipable Lord. But Akrura understood that what can Kamsa do to Krishna? I'm just going to take this an opportunity to see the holy land of Brajbhumi. I've heard so many nice things about Vrindavan, where Krishna performs so many beautiful pastimes. I will go and see for myself. And when I see Krishna and Balaram, certainly they will understand that I'm coming out of love. They know my heart of hearts. And they will bless me with their causeless mercy. So Akrura went to Vrindavan. And then he fell in the dust of the footprints of Krishna, in the holy dust of Braja. He saw the cows being milked. He came just at the sunset time, when all the cows were, all you could hear in all directions was the sound of the milk coming out of the cows, and the beautiful mooing of the cows, and the singing of the gopas and the gopis, the glories of Krishna. And then he brought Krishna back to Mathura. And Krishna met so many people in Mathura city. He came there with Akrura, but Nanda Maharaj and several of the leading cowherd men and even Krishna's friends, the cowherd boys, many of them came because they wanted to see this very famous, majestic, and opulent bull sacrifice. And also they wanted to see this wrestling match that Kamsa was inviting Krishna to participate in. So while roaming through the streets of Mathura, Krishna liberated many evil people and awarded many pious people devoted to his lotus feet. And then he came to the place of the bull sacrifice. It was a big, very, very awesome arena, crowded with people. And Kamsa's own soldiers were guarding the bow. And Krishna just went right inside and he started pushing his way through the crowds and he went right up to the bow. And the guards and the soldiers tried to stop him, but what could they do? Krishna just pushed them aside. And although this bow was so big and so strong that not even hundreds of men could lift this bow. It was insurmountable. Just its appearance was like a mountain. Krishna lifted the bow just as an elephant lifts the stalk of a lotus, effortlessly. And he pulled the string of the bow, and he pulled it in such a way that the bow cracked. As it cracked, it made such a tumultuous sound that Kamsa heard it in his palace, and fear struck his heart like a thunderbolt. And all the residents of Mathura heard this thunderous sound of the bow breaking. They were struck with wonder. And the Kamsa's soldiers were so angry that he had just come in and broken this bow that was sacred to Kamsa. They attacked Krishna with deadly weapons. And Krishna and Balaram both took the two different halves of the bow that was broken, and they beat to death all Kamsa's soldiers. And after beating them, killing them, the other soldiers just ran for their lives. Then Krishna went to take rest that night. They fed him, after washing his feet, they fed him milk and rice cooked together. And he and Balaram, knowing that the wrestling tournament was tomorrow, they were not at all nervous, but rather they very comfortably took rest that night. Meanwhile, Kamsa, he also knew the wrestling match was the next day, but he was not able to sleep. He was completely in anxiety. He was thinking, now what to do? Krishna's killed all these asuras I've sent to Vrindavan. Now he's come to Mathura. He's broken the bow and he's killed all of these soldiers. He tried to sleep to get good rest because he knew the next day would be a very, very challenging day for him. The contest of his life. But as he lay down, in his dreams as well as in his waking state, he saw the most inauspicious omens. When he looked in the mirror, in his reflection, there was no head. When he looked in his shadow, there was holes. When he looked at the stars and the moon, he saw that they were all double. He saw a golden hue covering the trees and the leaves all over the forests of the city. And he saw himself being embraced by ghosts. As he was being embraced by ghosts, he was riding on donkeys and drinking poison. And then he saw a dead corpse being carried with the funeral garland around him. In this way, many inauspicious signs. Kamsa was in complete anxiety. He was so agitated. He was so fearful that he could not sleep at night. Meanwhile, Krishna and Balaram were sleeping very nicely. And when morning came, Kamsa immediately got up, took his baths, and went to arrange for the wrestling tournament. In the big arena that was arranged only for this purpose, Kamsa sat on the raised platform, on the royal dais that the king will sit. Very, very beautifully decorated. Not only that, but the whole wrestling arena was very, very beautifully decorated as if for a grand, glorious festival. And then, Chanura and Mustika, along with their associates Kuta Shala and Toshala, they came into the wrestling arena with their trainers. And they were opulently decorated with all sorts of ornaments, costly ornaments. They were mountainous, powerful people. You cannot see people like this today. We have our wrestlers in the 20th century. They may show their muscles and everything, but what is it? They're like little children compared to Chanura and Mustika. Not even children. They're like little insects. Not even like insects. Little bacterias. And yet they're thinking, oh, I am so powerful, and their photos are posted like that. But Chanura and Mustika, they were like mountains. Each of the muscles in their body was like a mountain. And they were so fast and so quick and so strong, and they had mystic powers. And they were cruel, violent beings. They could just take with their bare hands and just crush anything and anyone to death. So when they came in, all the music was playing very loudly to welcome Chanura and Mustika. And they played special wrestling songs just fit for the occasion. Meanwhile, everything was set up, everything was there, but Krishna and Balaram didn't even come. The reason is Kamsa ordered them to be there at a certain time. And as far as Krishna and Balaram were concerned, why should we come according to his time schedule? So just to aggravate Kamsa, they just took their time and stayed home. Kamsa, why are they late? What is this? I am the king. Then Nanda Maharaj came with the cowherd men, and Kamsa called them forward to see him. And Nanda Maharaj, knowing him to be the king, he and the cowherd men offered Kamsa so many gifts out of the proper etiquette. And Kamsa told them to be seated. So they sat somewhere and just amongst the crowds. Meanwhile, Krishna was told that Kamsa's waiting. So Krishna and Balaram, in their own time, they started to happily approach the wrestling arena. But Kamsa was, every possible way, he was trying to make sure that Krishna would die. So stationed just outside the wrestling arena was a very, very powerful mystic elephant called Kuvalayapita. There are stories about this Kuvalayapita, how strong and powerful he was. He was not an ordinary elephant. He could practically move the earth by his strength. So this Kuvalayapita had his trainer on top, and he was standing in the gateway before Krishna. And as Krishna approached, Kuvalayapita, in great anger, he lifted Krishna with his trunk to destroy him. But Krishna, he was 11-year-old child at the time. He just slipped out of the trunk. And he ran between Kuvalayapita's legs. And Kuvalayapita was trying to find him. Desperately, angrily, trying to do everything to find, but he couldn't find Krishna. Every time he tried to reach him with his trunks, Krishna would very dexterously, he would hide behind different legs of Kuvalayapita. An elephant's legs, this elephant's legs were massive, like trees. He wasn't just like the elephants today. He was a Rakshasa elephant. And somehow or other, Kuvalyapita found Krishna. And he again picked him up with his trunk. And then Krishna again slipped out and jumped out of his trunk and began to dance around Kuvalyapita and ran from underneath him between his legs and then came out from behind and grabbed Kuvalyapita's tail and began to pull him down and he dragged him 25 bow lengths and were just, you know, moving him around like a child plays with a toy. Kuvalyapita was very, very helpless, more angry. Then Krishna let go of him. Then Krishna came right face to face with Kuvalyapita. Just inches apart, their faces were right next to each other. And they were looking at each other, and Kuvalyapita was so much anger and rage. Such a violent mood to destroy this child. And as they were face to face looking at each other, Krishna very blissfully slapped him in the face, then ran away. This was such an intolerable insult. Kuvalyapita started chasing after him. And Krishna was running away, and Kuvalyapita was chasing him, and he was running and chasing. And finally Krishna stopped, and Kuvalyapita decided, I will destroy him. And he took his tusks and he went down to annihilate Krishna with his tusks. But Krishna just moved aside and his tusks got stuck in the earth. By this time, he was completely mad. Kuvalyapita was mad with aggravation. And his trainer on top was a stick called an elephant goad. He was just poking him and poking him and poking him. You killed this Krishna, kill him, get him, get him. And Kuvalyapita was just... he was just beside himself, roaring. His eyes were red like coals. He was just like mad, insane with anger and frustration. And yet he was being poked and poked by his own trainer. And again he just attacked Krishna. And as he attacked Krishna, Krishna effortlessly, with one hand, he grabs him by his trunk. And he picked him up and threw him to the ground. And then Krishna, very sweetly, he just climbed on Kuvalyapita's massive mountain-like body and pulled out his tusk and beat him to death with his tusk, and then beat the trainer to death with the tusk. And then Balaram was so happy that he pulled out the other tusk. Kuvalyapita was dead. Krishna and Balaram, after performing this wonderful pastime, they placed a tusk each on their respective shoulders and entered into the wrestling arena. And it is said that because they had this good fight with Kuvalyapita, when they entered the wrestling arena, the blood of the elephant was beautifully decorating Krishna's body, mixed with his own perspiration. And when the people saw, the ladies and the people of Mathura saw the beauty of Krishna, they were ultimately attracted with so much types of affection. It is said that they were just drinking him with their eyes, and they were licking him with their tongues. They were embracing him with their arms and smelling him with their nostrils, hearing his walking with their ears. All their senses were totally immersed in finding ultimate satisfaction in looking at Krishna. As Krishna walked into that arena, everyone saw Krishna according to their particular state of consciousness. Krishna says in Gita, as you approach me, I will reveal myself accordingly. Chanura and Mustika saw Krishna and Balaram like thunderbolts, who had the most invincible power. And the man of Mathura saw Krishna as the most heroic man. And the women of Mathura, they saw Krishna as the most beautiful personification of Cupid, Kamdev himself, just to steal their hearts with his charms. And the impious people saw him as a great threat. The yogis saw him as the super soul within their hearts. Kamsa saw him as death personified. And the members of the Vrishni dynasty saw him as their most worshipable and loving lord. Then Kamsa announced the beginning of the wrestling contest. And Chanura spoke to Krishna and Balaram in a very antagonizing and egoistic way. He said that you have come on the invitation of the king Kamsa. He is our lord. He is our master. And we are assembled here to please him by performing this wrestling match. And if we do not please him by performing this wrestling match, we will be destroyed. And if we please him, all auspicious blessings will be upon us. And we have heard, Krishna and Balaram, that in the pasturing grounds of Vrindavan, you herd your cows and you play, and sometimes when you're playing, you wrestle with your friends, and therefore we have heard your fame as being a great wrestler. So let us proceed to begin this match. And Krishna replied that we are just livers of we live in the forest. We wrestle with little friends. We're just children. It is not fair to have a match unless there is equal opponents. But anyways, we will certainly wrestle with you. And then they began to wrestle. Chanura said, Krishna, I will wrestle with you, and your brother Balaram will wrestle with Mustika. And Shukadeva Goswami explains what type of match this was. They were fist to fist. Then their knees were crashing against each other. Then their elbows were crashing against each other. Their heads were crashing against each other. Their feet were kicking each other. Their hands were punching each other. And every time there was a blow, it was so loud, it just wreaked fear in everyone's heart. And sometimes they were punching each other, sometimes kicking each other, sometimes dragging each other onto the ground and dragging in circles. And when the people saw little Krishna and Balaram, especially the women of Mathura, they considered this was a terrible injustice. How could anyone allow such an irreligious thing to take place? These wrestlers, their Chanura and Mustika, their bodies are like mountainous thunderbolts. And Krishna Balaram, they are just immature children, and their limbs are so tender and soft. This is not a fair match. This is irreligious. anyone who even comes to watch this match should, if they have any piety at all, they will leave this place. They will not tolerate this. And they looked at the beauty of Krishna. And they were thinking how in the groves of Vrindavan they played with the cowherd boys and they danced with the gopis. And now they've come to Mathura and look what they have to do. This is the difference between Vrindavan and Mathura. They were thinking how fortunate the gopis must be. As everyone was looking at the charm of Krishna's beauty, that the gopis, they're always thinking of Krishna. They're always singing the glories of Krishna and Balaram. When Krishna goes out in the morning, he plays on his flute. And when he comes back at sunset, he plays on his flute. And the gopis, they leave whatever respective duties they're doing just to come to meet with Krishna, to see Krishna, to serve Krishna, to give pleasure to Krishna. Their hearts are always fixed in loving meditation on Krishna and nothing else. And their mouths are always singing his glories, whether they are milking the cows or whether they are husking the grains or whether they are collecting cow dung or whether they're feeding their baby children. Whatever they may be doing, the gopis always chanting the glories of Krishna. What a wonderful place this Vrindavan is. And how fortunate gopis are. Now after all these years, we are seeing Krishna ourselves with our own eyes. But this is a very, very terrible thing. How the beautiful sight of Krishna and Balaram fighting these big, big wrestlers. People's hearts were aggrieved. And Devaki and Vasudev, out of parental affection, they were thinking Krishna their own little child in Balaram. And when they saw their bodies crashing against the massive, terrible, violent bodies of Chanura and Mustika, they were thinking, why are we allowing this to happen? This is terrible. Our children will be destroyed. Krishna, seeing them, decided that enough with this wrestling match. And Krishna with his own fist began to beat on Chanura, and Balaram began to beat on Mustika. And as Chanura was being beaten by the fists of Krishna, every one of his limbs were being broken and crushed. He was in terrible agonizing pain. And just as a last resort, he just made one more attempt and he just charged at Krishna like a hawk attacks his prey. And with all of the strength in his hands, he began to pound on Krishna's chest and pound and pound and pound. And Krishna stood there just like an elephant being touched by a soft flower garland. And then Krishna, very transcendentally angry at Chanura, he, with one hand, he took Chanura by his two arms and he started whirling him around. And then he threw him to the ground with such force that Chanura's hair just went in all directions and all his ornaments broke and all his limbs broke and his body broke and he died. Krishna Bhagavan ki. And Balaram, seeing this ecstatic pastime of Krishna, he looked at Mushtika. And Mushtika attacked, knowing that this was the last chance. He attacked Balaram and started pounding on his chest and pounding and pounding and pounding. And Balaram, with one hand, slapped him. And just from that slap, Chanura fell to the ground and started passing urine and stool and vomiting blood. And his soul left that demoniac form. When the other wrestler saw Chanura and Mustika dead, Kuta came and attacked. He attacked Balaram, and Balaram slapped him to death and killed him. And then Shala came and attacked Krishna, and Krishna kicked his head with his toes and tore him in half by doing so. Krishna Balaram ki! And then Toshala came, and they killed him the same way. And then all the other wrestlers just started running away for their lives. As fast as they could run, they ran away. And after all these wrestlers were laying there dead, the cowherd boys were so happy that Krishna and the cowherd boys, they just began to celebrate. The Brijbasis that came, they just jumped off their seats and went down to the wrestling arena and started embracing Krishna, and Krishna and Balaram, being so happy that they were victorious, they started jumping up and down and just dancing in victory, and all the little cowherd boys were dancing around and praising Krishna, and Krishna and Balaram were jumping and jumping, victory, 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 and everyone was so happy. The Brahmins were chanting mantras and prayers, and the residents of Dwarka were celebrating, but one person was miserable. Kamsa. His heart was being cracked by such fear. And from his royal throne, in a very loud and thunderous voice, he said, "Drive Krishna and Balaram out of the city of Mathura. Plunder all the wealth of these insignificant cowherd men. Arrest that fool Nanda Maharaj. Put him in prison. And immediately kill Vasudev, and kill my father Ugrasena, and kill all the associates who has aligned themselves with my enemies." Krishna heard this. He became quite full of anger. And very gracefully he jumped up from the wrestling arena to the high dais, and he came to Kamsa's seat. And Kamsa, seeing Krishna coming, he stood up and he drew his powerful sword and shield. And he started going to the right and to the left and to the right and to the left, trying to kill Krishna. Krishna knocked the crown off Kamsa's head. Then he grabbed him by the hair and dragged him down to the wrestling arena and threw him to the ground. Kamsa was struggling and straining. Krishna, in his beautiful, beautiful, graceful way, he straddled upon Kamsa's chest, and with those fists that are so soft that they give the greatest pleasure to his devotees, they began to pound on Kamsa's chest. And being beaten by the mighty blows of Krishna, Kamsa left his body. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki! But because Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna, in fear and anger and hatred and envy, but somehow or other, he was always thinking of Krishna. Because he was so engrossed in thinking of the form of Krishna, when Krishna killed him, his soul was transported to Vaikuntha, where he was given the same form as Krishna, as one of the residents of the spiritual world. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki! This is the mercy of Lord Krishna. Therefore, it is the most sacred duty of everyone's life to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. If such a terrible demon get such a high state of liberation just by remembering the form of Krishna in hatred and envy and fear, what to speak of the destination of a devotee who is remembering Krishna with a loving desire to serve. But Vasudeva and Devaki, they were so much fearful of this Kamsa. When they saw Krishna jump up on the dais to get Kamsa, they were thinking, this is the moment we've been dreading. Because they saw little Krishna, so small and tender, next to this powerful Kamsa. And Vasudeva and Devaki knew the power of Kamsa. He already killed six of their children right before their eyes. And they were thinking, now Kamsa is going to kill Krishna too. But after Krishna killed Kamsa, he wanted to relieve Devaki and Vasudeva and the cowherd men of any possible trace of doubt in their mind that he was dead. And therefore he started dragging Kamsa all around the wrestle arena. And then everyone became very happy, except Kamsa's eight brothers. They came and attacked. And Krishna Balaram, they killed all the eight brothers effortlessly. Then the other soldiers, they just started to run away. And Kamsa's wives, they came down to the wrestling arena and they were weeping, tears, sobbing, and beating their heads in pain. And they came down and started embracing the dead corpse of Kamsa. They started offering prayers to Kamsa. How will we live without you? You are the ruler of the city. You are the very embodiment of goodness and compassion. Whatever was beautiful about Mathura was only due to your lotus feet being here. Now that it is gone, all the beauty and charm of Mathura will be gone. In this way they were weeping and grieving in their own ignorant way. But then they became a little more sensible and they started saying, because of your vicious cruelty to others, therefore you had to die like this. But what will happen to us? Now we are unprotected. We have no Lord. Our Master is gone. You dared to challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, out of great compassion, he actually solaced the wives of Kamsa. And because Kamsa was his uncle, Krishna arranged for all the proper funeral rites to be performed to Kamsa and his eight brothers. And then Krishna approached Devaki and Vasudeva. And Krishna and Balaram, both after so many long years, Vasudeva and Devaki had no association with Krishna. Please remember, at this moment, it was the first time that Krishna and Balaram were together with Vasudeva since the night of Janmashtami when Vasudeva brought Krishna to Gokul Mahavan. The first time they saw him again after that birth, 11 years ago. Here it says 16 years Krishna was. That is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because Yashoda Mai gave Krishna such nutritious milk to drink in Vrindavan, even though he was only between hardly 11, 12 years old, his body looked like a 16-year-old boy. So Vasudeva and Devaki never saw Krishna again. They would hear him. They were in a prison. They could not go to visit him. They would hear his stories and their hearts would be overwhelmed with love. And the first time they saw him was when they came and started wrestling with Chanura and Mustika, and they were in so much fear, how will they survive? So this was the first time in all these years since the night of his birth, and they never saw Balaram, even though Balaram was their own son. He was transferred to the womb. Vasudev understood he is Rohini Nandani, but he never saw Balaram. And here they were, for the first time after the killing of Kamsa, Krishna and Balaram touched the feet of their parents with their heads. And Vasudeva and Devaki, after seeing Krishna kill Kamsa, they understood this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So at that moment, they did not embrace their children, but they stood with folded hands and offered obeisances to him. Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport in brief this beautiful story of Kamsa's death at the merciful hands of Krishna. And simply by hearing this wonderful narration of Krishna as the killer of Kamsa, the demons within our own hearts who are always trying to attack our Krishna consciousness will be slain by the Lord. Therefore, to hear these wonderful pastimes is so very important. And to hear the stories of Krishna killing the demons are extremely important for those on the path of Vaidhi Bhakti, who are trying to purify their hearts through sadhana. Because by remembering these wonderful pastimes of Krishna killing the asuras, these pastimes are none different than Krishna himself. Krishna will kill the asuras within our own hearts. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
Krishna. Maharaj, Kamsa was noticing the power of Krishna. Then he was seeing in front of his eyes what is happening to his dear friends and all. Still, why he was going ahead and trying to fight with Krishna, and still he want to trying to destroy Krishna? He was knowing everything, and that is
because he was covered by the power of Maya, as everyone is in this world. Maharaj Yudhisthira said the greatest wonder is that everyone sees everyone dying and everyone is thinking, I will not die. Even though so many indications that death is coming, still we're trying to make so many material arrangements. So many arrangements for our own body, for our own prestige, for our own families, for our own empires. So many, even though we know death is coming, it's just the covering of Maya. Naham prakasha saravasya yoga maya samavrita. How many people in this world see death coming, but just continue to do all their material business as if they're going to live forever? Why not just surrender to Krishna now and do the real? Leave the great lesson for the world to see how to perfect your life. The great kings, they know. We see the great kings who are Vaishnavas. When they, as soon as their children are old enough, they don't delay a minute. they go to the forest. They forsake everything, use just everything for Krishna, because they want to show an example. But now we see so many indications, so many signs, death is coming, but still material considerations. Not just wholesale, Krishna, I'm yours, everything, surrender. That is the illusion we all have. So Kamsa was in that illusion too. He saw the great power of Krishna, but still he was thinking, somehow or other I will kill him. Somehow or other I will survive. That is the illusion of Maya. We're all in that illusion. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the demons who are coming and attacking our Krishna consciousness are ultimately destroyed by Krishna. Sometimes we have our friends from the time that we were not in Krishna consciousness who come as guests to our house and who are still following their own materialistic ways, like they might be drinking or smoking or such activities. Then how does one treat such guests?
Pralambasura. Pralambasura was a very dangerous demon. He was very dangerous because he disguised himself as of Krishna's friend. He looked just like a cowherd boy, just like a relative. Therefore, he was more dangerous. Everyone knew that Aristasura was a demon. Everyone knew Agasura was a demon. But Pralambasura, he looked just like a friend and a relative of Krishna. I'm coming as a guest. I'm a new, and everyone greeted him. Oh, very nice, very nice. But his intention was to kill Krishna. So you have to be careful when Pralambasura has come to your house. Of course, they may not have evil intentions, but Maya does, and she's using them for that purpose. So therefore, you may be respectful and kind to them on a social level, but at the same time, you have to understand that you have to protect Krishna in your heart. You have to take shelter of Krishna to protect you. Because actually, usually these people would be very happy to take away your Krishna consciousness. Oftentimes they think, what is this ISKCON? What is this Krishna consciousness? Why are you doing this? Why are you so different from all normal people? Why you go to the temple so much? Why you only eat prasad? Why you dance around like some crazy person? Why you're chanting all day? Why you have all pictures of Krishna and not horses and beautiful ladies and everything in your house? What is this? You're not normal. You're fanatic. You're brainwashed. You're antisocial. You don't go to clubs, you don't go to restaurants, you don't come to marriages anymore. What kind of outcast have you become? Generally, this is the way relatives and friends think of devotees. Sometimes not. Sometimes they're favorable and sympathetic. But generally, they'll be very happy if you give up your Krishna consciousness and become like them, which is the ultimate perfection of their life. Every parent feels the ultimate perfection of life of my child is to be like me and suffer. So we should understand they may have good, loving intentions, but they are all empowered by Maya. All their good, loving intentions are the weapons of Maya to try to steer you away from Krishna. So therefore you have to be very careful in that association. Very, very careful. Because on a gross and subtle level, they can take you away from Krishna. They can put doubts in your mind. They'll tell you, don't you see how we're enjoying? You don't even have a television in your house. What sort of barbaric lifestyle do you have? This is not even, you're uncivilized if you don't have a television in your house. And you don't go to the cinemas? And you don't even know who won the cricket match? You must be blind, deaf, dumb. All the good things in life. So on a subtle level, if people are thinking like this of us, we should understand that it's actually Maya's Shakti, through this energy, coming to take Krishna away. Coming to kill Krishna in our heart, which is meant to be Vrindavan. So we must be very careful to associate with devotees. And when we associate with such people, on a social level, we may be respectful, but we should be very conscious of the dangers. And we should not waste more time than absolutely necessary. Unless we can somehow, if they're sympathetic and we can give them Krishna, that is very nice. But we should not allow anyone to compromise our desire for devotional service. If a person has a very strong and intense desire to serve, no one has a right to compromise that person's surrender. Because you have to surrender everything before you die, and you could die at any moment. Krishna says, sarva dharmam padityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Surrender everything to me. This is the purpose of life. He doesn't say, surrender something to me. Something doesn't mean surrender. Surrender means everything. So if we want to surrender everything, if we have that intense desire, we cannot compromise that. Sometimes our old friends will come and say, don't surrender everything, just surrender something. Sometimes our family members will try to convince us to compromise. Sometimes our husbands and wives, our mothers, our fathers, our sisters, our brothers are trying to convince us to compromise. But we should not compromise for anything or anyone. So we should be respectful and kind to everyone, but we have to preserve our principles of devotion and surrender at all costs. We're not concerned ultimately with any material attachments, with any family attachments, with any social attachments. We're concerned with surrendering to Krishna. And all of these other attachments are only auspicious to the degree that they're complementing and harmonizing our surrender to Krishna. If they're not, then we should simply external formality. But we have to very much protect ourselves. Is this not what the acharyas have taught us? This is Krishna's word. We accept Krishna's word above all other words. Does that answer your question? So beware of Pralambasura and his various disguises. He has so many disguises. He could come as a cowherd boy, he could come as a wife or a husband or a or a son or a daughter or a father-in-law or mother-in-law or uncles or aunts or cousins or anything. Can come as our old best friend, as our colleagues in college. But always keep Krishna in the center. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Gopinarami.